You are listening to Zero E Michigan with Carl Bloss and Larry Hudson. On this show, we try to explore and simplify what's happening with electric vehicles, energy generation, and zero emissions topics with a focus on our home state of Michigan. Together with our guests, we demystify topics related to driving electric in Michigan and how you can select, charge, maintain, and get the maximum value out of your EV. This podcast is sponsored by Consumers Energy and the Power My Drive program. Start your EV journey at consumersenergy.com/EV. Learn EV basics like charging and cost savings. Then find your perfect EV. Partner with us for home charging installation. Get a $500 rebate on a home EV charger. Or get $10 a month simply for charging off-peak. Need more guidance? Talk to an EV specialist to help you through the process. Get started at consumersenergy.com/EV. Welcome back to the Zero E Michigan podcast. Our guest today is Ryan Pringnitz. Larry and I met Ryan through the Consumers Energy newsletter. Ryan sent an email as a response to one of the previous issues and said, hey, here's who I am. I'd be interested in taking part in this. So Ryan, if you want to introduce yourself and tell us a little bit of background, how you got into solar and EVs and the related topics.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Carl. It's a blast to be on. You know, I see in the newsletter as I'm a EV owner and I have a rate plan through Consumers Energy that I think offered or rather made me aware of this newsletter. So I subscribed and saw that you guys were looking for, you know, customers who have EVs and want to share their story. And I thought I'd reach out. So pleasure to be here. You know, we looked at solar and we got our new house because we had a brand new roof. And I heard that that was really key when looking at solar. You know, you don't want to have to get a new roof right as you put your solar array on. So I thought, hey, you know, it's perfect timing. There's a 30% federal tax credit. Let's go ahead and do it. There was really great financing too at the time, which made it super attractive as well. My loan that I would end up with made it, you know, pretty much equivalent to my electric bill or even less, depending on the month. So that was great as I was able to, eliminate my electric bill and basically replace it with a loan. But then I got, of course, a 30% federal tax credit. So that felt pretty financially smart at the time. You know, I wasn't buying an expensive EV, which can be a real unfortunate drag on your finances, especially as you're buying a house and financing all that. So we got that taken care of, the house, the solar, waited a few years for EVs to become a little more popular, a little more mainstream. And we took a test drive in a Model Y after hearing countless coworkers rave about them, praise them. And, you know, they were just the talk of the town, so to speak. So we test drove one in Fort Myers, Florida. And wasn't even a month later and we were making the purchase on Tesla.com. So here we are more than 12 months later, a happy Tesla Model Y owner.
Very cool. It's funny because usually EV owners go the other direction. And I've heard the phrase before that EVs are a gateway drug to solar. And and that's how it was for me. After I got my I had a Nissan Leaf first and then got a Tesla. And then my engineer friends were teasing me like, oh, you're driving on coal. And, yeah. That's a whole other discussion. EVs are still more efficient even on fossil fuel power, but it does make you more conscious. And you see, this is how many kilowatt hours I'm consuming. And then I went ahead and got a 10 kW solar panel system because I had a pretty demanding house. So it's interesting that you went the other way, and I certainly concur with the concept that your roof needs to be in good shape. And that was one mistake that I made at the time in Missouri where I lived. The local utility was giving rebates for a solar panel system, and I needed to jump on it, irrespective of my roof. And then, unfortunately, later I had to replace my roof due to hail damage, and so that was a real hassle. So maybe that's a good point: is if you're going to do solar, make sure that your roof is in good shape. So yeah. I seem to recall when we first talked that you said that you actually had built up some credits from the solar panel system. So in terms of kilowatt hours. And I think you had made a point that, oh, you'd finally use those up now that you have an EV. So tell us a little bit about the whole net metering experience and, you know, not having a bill. How does that all work?
Yeah, it's a great point. You know, we use the grid kind of like our battery storage in a sense. You know, everything I don't use, I sell it back to our utility and they pay, a rate for that. And it's a time of use rate. So during the middle of the day, when it's the most expensive electricity rate, I'm able to generate that power and sell it back to the utility, which has been fantastic for helping to, you know, rationalize the cost of a solar array. Also, it's great because I don't have to invest in, say, a battery storage like system at the house. So there are some, you know, things to talk about with respect to how battery storage at the house could change your experience in an outage, a power outage. But that aside, we've been able to take advantage of, you know, the net metering program, selling these excess power back to our utility. And for the longest time, you know, about 4 or 5 years, we had an electric bill that was basically 10, 12 bucks a month. You know, there's a few mandatory fees like interconnect fees to have access to the grid. But we finally burned those credits down because our winters, of course, a little bit more cloudy in Michigan and a little bit less sun. So unfortunately, the EVs do use a little more power in the winter, of course. So after owning it for 2 winters, well, we finally, you know, consumed all of our credits. And now we're actually buying power a little bit, a power that is, in the middle of winter. So it's not the end of the world. And in fact, it's great that the power rate is pretty constant, like the price that I pay, you know, whereas if I had a gas car, it's kind of, you know, rates are changing every day for gas prices, of course. So owning an EV, it's nice that even if you don't have solar, it's pretty easy to kind of plan or budget what you're going to spend on gas for your car, you know?
And as far as those savings, obviously your electricity usage went up, you're starting to pay a little bit more. What would you say is about the savings on a monthly basis for, and maybe talk about what's your use case, how much do you drive? And so obviously when you're using more energy to power your vehicle, you're now not paying for gas anymore.
Definitely. So I've put about 14, 15,000 miles on the car. And we would spend about, you know, 110 to 120 a month roughly on electricity, if you kind of average it out over the 12 months. So with an EV, we think we've seen about maybe $20 to $30 worth of usage. So I'm burning an extra $20 to $30 worth of credits up every month, so to speak, until I, you know, exhausted them. So all in, if I were paying with no solar, you know, no credits of any sort, I would probably be spending about $150 out of pocket a month to the utility. So that's how much I'm saving if I'm able to offset most of it, you know, all but that last $10, $12. And I think this summer we will be probably breaking even. So we'll probably be, you know, hopefully not consuming too much from the grid. But I think in the winters, I'm probably going to have an out-of-pocket cost still maybe of about 10, 15 bucks a month, depending on how much I drive in these particularly cold and, you know, bitter winters we can have up here at times.
So yeah, the $150 a month, that's your entire house usage. That's not just the car.
That exactly. Right? That's, yeah, you know, the computers, the, we have mostly gas appliances, but we do have an espresso machine and, you know, a couple other, you know, appliances that use a little bit of juice, I guess.
So did you break it down to what the car's using? We had a guy, that was doing, I can't think of his name, but 10 years ago had Carl's position kind of at Consumers. And he would invite us up to Lansing and he would have like 5 or 6 guests. And there was a German guy that broke it down. And he was basically saying, don't even hook to the grid, just charge your car. So he was charging his Tesla and his daughter's Tesla. And he says, that's where you're getting the best bang for your buck, because he would break it down, you know, to what, if you were driving a gas powered ICE car,
yeah,
what you were getting per mile. And so you're really making good money. And so that's where I've been trying to figure that out, but it's not as easy as it sounds, right? You can't just put solar in your house and plug it into your car. There's kind of a process. And I don't know if you, I'm still confused on it. I don't know if either one of you can speak to that.
Well, maybe you want to talk about the whole grid tied thing. So I did the same thing at my house in Missouri. I didn't put batteries in, so I used the grid as storage. So when the idea is when you overproduce, you're not using as much as you're generating, you're sending it out to the grid, and then your meter, quote unquote, spins backwards. So you're getting credit for that. Yeah. And then at nighttime or when you're overusing more than your panels can produce, then you're pulling back and you pay that net. Is that how it works here too, Ryan?
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. And to do that, there's certain requirements, right? The size of the system is limited actually by, I think it was calculated actually, they had to look at my last 12 months worth of use. And from that, they could say, you know, you're allowed to build XYZ, you know, large system. And for me, it was a 5.9 kilowatt, I think it is, or is it kilowatt hours? Which one is
it? No, it's kilowatt is the instantaneous power. So that's the amount under ideal conditions that those panels could generate. So in 1 hour of ideal generation, you would produce 5.9 kilowatt hours, and 11.8 in 2 hours and so on.
Yeah. And that's my limit, right? So in Larry's example, to do that, I would probably need to forego the grid connection, or at least the net metering agreement where they allow me to sell it back. And they might, in fact, take it, I don't want to say for free, but I wouldn't be able to participate in that credit generation. And I would, be able to overbuild, I guess, build too much capacity, so to speak. But during the winter months, you might, in fact, need every last bit of capacity that you have. And during those summer months, I'm sure you're probably going to have more power than you know what to do with.
It depends on your use case.
Exactly. Right? There's more to that discussion, I feel.
Sure.
So I don't know. Is it like that everywhere? Have you heard differently?
It's not. In Missouri, they did not have net metering. So the company that gave me the proposal recommended to me to never be in a position where I produce more than I consume on a monthly basis. Within the month, your billing cycle, you're going to produce more at some point, you're going to consume more at some point. And what they found is that what they call the shoulder months, so spring and fall, we used to have a decent amount of insulation. So insulation, not insulation. So how much energy is coming in, but you're not consuming a lot through your HVAC system. So for example, air conditioning and heat pumps and that sort of thing consumes a lot of energy. Mm-hmm. And of course, during those periods where it's like the perfect temperature and you can have the windows open, you're not using that. So what they recommended to me was to not overproduce during those shoulder months. And what that meant was, in the wintertime, it was pretty much spot on. Maybe I under-generated a little bit. Again, it was Missouri, but we still get cold winter with snow and ice. And in the summertime, my consumption was just so high. And that's what I mentioned earlier, the use case. So not only did I have two EVs already at the time, but it was a house in Missouri that, was getting 90s temperatures, and I was running an air conditioner, and I had a swimming pool, so there was a pool pump that was running all the time. So trying to balance all those things so that you don't overproduce, because you may not have full net metering. Now, if you have net metering and you can get back in cost-wise everything that you consume, it's the same rate coming or going, you could actually make money. And that's probably why they put a limit, so that you don't use this as a profit center.
Yeah. I see it as a privilege to be able to participate in net metering. The utilities have a difficult job at times, especially as we've seen recently, and they have to balance, power generation with power demand. And they're, of course, trying to make a workable system for everybody, both producers of power like myself and I really appreciate them offering it, but I understand it definitely varies, location by location, but there's plenty of great solar installers now. So thankfully, if you're looking for information, you know, probably nearby, you'll find many resources who are familiar with the laws and ordinances and what, you know, rebates and programs are available. So no better time than now to look at what options you have.
Right. And those tax credits are still out there. And that brings me back to another question. Did you approximately calculate your payback period? So when I did it in Missouri, it was about 12 years without the utility component, but including the federal tax credit. But again, at the time, KCP&L was giving $1.50 a watt, and I had a 10 kW system, which means once it was installed and inspected and everything, I got a $15,000 check towards that system, which took the payback period to about 9 years. You got any insights into what your system looks like there?
Yeah, it was a similar experience, you know, about 11, 12 years before getting an electric vehicle. But one thing that, you know, the installation company made me aware of was it can actually be a little challenging to arrive at a precise calculation here. And when they were selling me the system, of course, they showed me average Michigan utility prices over the last like 2-3 decades. And of course, it's one of those charts that are just going up and to the right, which is to say these prices never get cheaper. So the value of that power that you're generating is going to increase over that 10-year period, without a doubt. How much it's going to increase, of course, that's up for debate, and we'll see it as it comes, right? But the power is going to get more expensive. So that 11, 12-year period, that's with, you know, maybe today's rates, or when I bought the array 4 or 5 years ago, that was with, you know, rates of 5 years ago, which are significantly less now. And so I actually have struggled to arrive at a, you know, a precise number where it's like 8.7 months, right? But I'm hoping that I'm closer to that 9 year number now, maybe 8 years with an EV. But I think it really depends on the price of electricity, you know, going forward in the future, because it's just getting more expensive no matter where you look, right?
Right. Yeah. No, that's a good point. Coming back to the cost of running an EV, I believe the number that I used to use quite a bit is 5 cents a mile. If you're driving electric, you know, a light duty vehicle that gets, I don't know, 3.5-4 miles per kilowatt hour, and then you're charging using the off peak rate. So for Consumers Energy right now, that would be about 14 cents per kilowatt hour, all in with all the distribution fees. And if you do that math, it ends up to about 5 cents a mile. And if you do the math for driving a gas vehicle, you know, the easy one, if you, and again, you got to use averages, everybody's going to be different, but let's say 1,000 miles at 25 miles per gallon is 40 gallons. And then what's the price of gas right now? I don't even know, because I don't buy gas, but is it like $4 a gallon? So
yeah, that's close.
Okay. So you're using 40 gallons times $4 a gallon. That's $160. So that's 16 cents a mile. So that's the easy way. So 5 cents a mile, 16 cents a mile. And you usually find that it's about, if you're doing this at, you know, home charging, it's about a 3-to-1 difference per mile. So the more you drive, the more you save.
I feel like you should be using the ICE price, because that's kind of the average of the world. You know, when you're, what am I making back? Because if Elon didn't make these electric cars, we didn't have them, you know? So it seems like you should be using the ICE to average in what you're saving. And then that would pay your panels back even, right? 3 times faster.
Not only an ICE price, right? But a fun ICE vehicle, like a nice fun, sporty one with some utility. I mean, the cargo space on some of these EVs coming out now, the Lyriq, the, you know, EV6, the Model Y. I mean, these things have just a massive, massive interior space where you can fit probably a piano. I don't know. I mean, something just absolutely ridiculous.
And, well, let's talk about that. Why did you pick the Model Y? And you have a Model Y Performance. Yeah. So what vehicle were you coming from? What else were you considering before you took what Larry calls the green pill?
Well, I mean, something like a BMW, a twin turbo, you know, V6 would have been a lovely car to own, but it would have lacked the utility, right? The cargo space would have been limited. the gas mileage, I wish it would have gotten 25, right, Larry? It probably would have gotten closer to 16 or something like that. So a fun ICE vehicle, you know, something with some utility. Gosh, those things are getting just, you know, some of the worst, you know, mileage you can get out there, unless you're getting like a plug-in hybrid, of course. But, you know, we were looking for utility. So we needed to be able to haul the dog. We wanted something that had dog mode, which was just a blessing. And
Do we want to talk about what that is? Because some people don't know what that is.
Back to that. But, you know, utility, some fun to it, you know, because I came from a hybrid vehicle that was, of course, great on gas mileage, like 46, 47 miles per gallon. But, you know, the engine was loud. It was slow and just and not the funnest vehicle to drive around town and such. So utility, the ability to tow something, the ability to kind of, you know, have some fun, I guess, and some spirited driving. You know, that's what I was looking for. And the Model Y Performance was available and just a no-brainer, I think, for the family.
Nice.
Checked all the boxes.
Yeah. Exactly. And I, you know, personally, I fully agree. I didn't get the Performance, but I did just get a Model Y. And yeah. And I migrated from a Model S. My green pill story is I was in Germany and I came back to the States and was looking for a car. And at first I was an Audi guy. I was thinking, you know, an Audi, something like an S8. I had gone from an A6 when I moved to Germany as an expat, but then, you know, couldn't keep our cars. So when I came back, I thought, oh, I'm going to get an S8, you know, fun car. But holy cow, you talk about gas usage. I think at the time it was either a V8 turbo or a V10. And holy cow. And then I got into the electrics, total antithesis of that vehicle, Nissan Leaf, as my first one just to try it out. But then we went with the Tesla Model S, which also for us had great utility because it was a hatchback on top of everything else. And I love the looks. But now that, you know, time moved on, I wanted a little more range. I want a little faster charging. So we also went with the Model Y. And we haven't road trip with it, but I mean, we're loving that thing. We just got about 1,000 miles on it. So yeah, great choice.
But you don't get anything about your S. There's not, I mean, besides
yeah,
the look.
Sure. Yeah. And you have to remember I'm comparing a 2015 Model S and with a 2023 Model Y. So, you know, the current version of the Model S, if I were to buy that, you know, it has even greater range and same fast charging. And it has, maybe I missed that little display behind the steering wheel. Although after a while you get used to not having it, maybe a separate discussion sometime. Want to make sure we tell Ryan's story. Your Model Y, have you road trip with it? You talked about dog mode. Yeah. Let's go back to dog mode. Tell us what that is.
Yeah, we have a dog, of course. And, we have the Tesla dog kind of seat covers and such, and they work fantastic. So what we're able to do is, you know, we can take our dog to the beach, we can stick him in the car with dog mode on. It has the screen illuminate and has a fun little dog animation where it's telling, you know, people who pass by the car, you know, the temperature is XYZ and, you know, I'm a happy dog in here, right? So don't call the animal authority on me.
Don't break the window.
Exactly. And we're able to go sneak off and maybe grab an ice cream real quick and then hop back to the vehicle. We can even, as of late, you know, with an over-the-air update, we can now look at the webcam on the inside of the car while we're away from it, from our phone. So we can sit and look at Luca, his name is, our pet corgi in the back seat. And he's usually just sitting there chilling, you know, hanging out. And
if he's ripping up the seat, then you know to come back quicker.
That's right. Well, I guess you could see it happening in real time for the insurance evidence or something like that. But
that's great. Anyway,
it's great because we're able to get all this utility, and you know, being green here doesn't really have any sacrifices. And in this case, there's so many benefits we get from it, and being able to take our dog, you know, to more places and hang out with them more is just a real blessing. So, you know, we've done road trips now that we previously really didn't do because it was, in a sense, more difficult with having our dog. But
what was the car before? What was that hybrid?
Yeah, it's a Honda Insight. Okay. You know, perfectly fine sedan, kind of built on the Civic chassis, I think it is. But with it comes with, you know, limited cargo. Of course, you know, you can run on pure battery for maybe a mile or two with it, but you can't run it in dog mode, so to speak, for, you know, 20, 30 minutes while you have to go run and get an ice cream or whatever it is. But we've taken it all the way to Houghton, Michigan, from Kalamazoo, Michigan. So if you're not familiar, you know, break your hand out and look down in the lower southwest corner of Michigan. That's, you know, Kalamazoo, Michigan. And I guess if you had your other hand up top and you're looking at the UP of Michigan, well, Houghton, Michigan is way up there on that fingertip, almost, so to speak. It's about as far as north as you get, almost, right?
Yep.
So,
and that's pretty ambitious, because even in as good as the Tesla supercharger network is, there's still some charging deserts up there. So that's quite the trip.
But they're getting filled in too, you know, Carl. It's in fact, Tesla will get you to Marquette with the Marquette supercharger, but north of that, in Houghton itself, now we have a charge point, you know, fast charger up there. They've also got some level two chargers nearby if the fast chargers are occupied. And then even further north, up in Copper Harbor, and we've got some Rivian waypoints up there, which are fantastic. I think they may even be free or at a very reduced price, you know, compliments of Rivian. So those gaps are getting smaller and smaller, but it's definitely easier, I think, on a Tesla in most scenarios. We've got a trip planned here in a couple of weeks for a Rosemary Beach, which is in Florida, in the Panhandle, kind of by Pensacola or Panama City Beach, depending on where you're looking. But that'll be about a 17, 18-hour drive, I think, depending on the amount of charging stops that we take. But I think we're going to break it up in Birmingham, Alabama, or somewhere thereabouts. But, you know, it'll be a fun trip. And I think all of our stops are placed right about where we might want to stop anyways, with Luca or ourselves with, like, say, a restroom break. So it's a blast, you know, planning trips and, you know, looking at what we can do along the way. And what have been your experiences? So have you taken, you said, not really many longer trips?
Yeah, not with the Model Y. Now, we went to Phoenix, Arizona with the Model S. And, you know, maybe one of the big differences back then, you got free lifetime supercharging. So I didn't really care how long I stopped. That's unfortunately gone for me. The new owner has it, and he's super happy with that. So for us now, we're looking a little bit more at the price as well. I have one of the CCS adapters. So we are planning a trip here to North Carolina shortly. And I just did a quick, you know, plugged in my destination on the car's GPS on the navigation system, which then calculates the supercharger stops. And I was very pleasantly surprised. So our first day, we're going to go down to Chillicothe, Ohio, which is about 420 miles, I think. And so it only put in two stops, and they were like 25 minutes and 20 minutes. And I mean, we take longer than that anyway. I can't get my wife out of a mire, you know, before half an hour, and I like my coffee. So that's already much better than the 2015 Model S, which really, even by today's standards, you know, the charging power is over 100 kilowatts on that car, you know, and I'm hearing 250 peak on the Tesla, which of course drops off pretty quickly. But nonetheless, I'm looking forward to the shorter stops. But already, I mean, it was 5,000 miles to Phoenix or round trip. It's totally doable. And now it's just a matter of, there's so many places to charge. Now I just have to pick which are my favorites.
Yeah, I think it's great that you bring up that curve though, right? Because that charge curve is kind of a big topic when you look at how long you're at a particular station. And ideally, I think everybody's charging from a very low state of charge, like 2%, 3%, and going to maybe 50 or 60%, something like that. And, you know, after that, 0 to 60, we'll call it, you know, things start to drop off typically on any EV. Some of them are better than others, but ideally you're arriving at those chargers with a pretty low state of charge and not necessarily charging all the way, right? What's your Ben experience? Right.
Well, I kind of let the Tesla system tell me based on the next stop. So again, it will only charge to what you need to get you there, with typically like a 10 to 15% buffer so that, you know, if there's a detour or you use some extra energy for whatever reason, that you know, you have that comfort level. So yeah, I typically let it do that. Now there are times when we really just want to do a sit down meal and I'll just let it go up. Now again, that was with free supercharging. Maybe it's going to look a little differently now. Maybe I want to optimize that. But I don't have an experience with that yet, but yeah, typically we just stay as long as we need, with the asterisk that sometimes what we want to do inside the store or the meal, you know, the meals that we take in or the coffee actually takes longer than the charging. So we get more of a charge than we really absolutely needed, which either just has you arrive with a higher state of charge, or you can now say, well, I'm going to skip this charger and I'm going to go to the next one.
I've so done that.
I arrive with a lower state of charge and get faster charging again. So there's a little bit of a game that you can play, but just the fact that you have that freedom to do that, you're not saying, well, if I get to this charger and it's out of commission, then I'm hosed, which on a Tesla typically doesn't happen because there's so much redundancy.
I've played that game though, and I don't want to say I almost lost it, but I cut it close, arriving once at 2.4%, 2.5%. And what was interesting is I went against the Tesla system in a sense, right? It had me arrive at what would be the Ann Arbor charger. And my wife and I took a day trip to Wyandotte, which is South Detroit, watch a Super Bowl. And, you know, it's not a hard trip by any particular, you know, or rather in any particular ICE car. It's easy to do. But we arrived in Ann Arbor with, you know, it wasn't super low state of charge, but the performance of the charger was actually a little bit slower because apparently the utility had recently throttled the station. So no particular charger could output more than, I think, 50 kilowatts. So I said, wow. Oh, the heck with this. I'm going to, you know, we got to get out of here and get home. So we left after getting just a few percentage, enough to get us to the Marshall supercharger, which is home to the new battery site that I think Ford is doing. But we would arrive with like 10%. Then it got cooler, got colder out. The winds picked up. And while we're driving, it says, you know, you're using X percentage more than expected, like 3.7% more, something like that. And it would go up, it would go down. And it was saying, you know, based on a oncoming wind or a northeast wind for, 7 miles per hour or something like that. So we arrived with less than what we thought we would have, but the vehicle was always keeping us aware of, our limits and even advising you if necessary to slow down, you know, to drive not 75 or 70, maybe take it back to 65 to make sure you arrive with a sufficient charge. But, you know, owners want to make sure they understand their limits, I think, and know their options with charging, right? So
Had a little range anxiety there?
You could say that, right? I mean, you might not always have the patience in certain scenarios. Like, you know, if you're trying to do a quick day trip, right, you're not necessarily trying to take a big detour to get to that fast charger if you can avoid it, right? And then if you do get there, to see it maybe have a line or to have it, slower than expected, I mean, that can really, really throw a wrench in your plans if you're already driving later than you'd prefer, something like that. You know, there have been scenarios where we still take even our ICE car, like for instance, airports. We, you know, of course, living in Michigan, we're going to have more battery consumption driving in the winter. And then if we leave our vehicle for a week or something like that, we've got maybe a little bit of drain that might occur over the days. And we don't want to get back, say, at 1 a.m. on a flight and then have to go find the fast charger, which, you know, happens to be north and you have to go south. So there have been scenarios still where, you know, 2023, there's travel patterns that are just a little bit easier still in an ICE car. But I think we're seeing that change dramatically here in West Michigan and Southeast Michigan. But you have to stay armed with information. And I'm curious, Larry, what have you found works well for, I guess, learning about what's out there for chargers and what are you using to charge, I guess, because there's different apps, websites. Anything you found that works well?
Right. Well, so I drive a Volt, so I have the, you know, range extender. So I don't have the experience that was going to lead me to ask if Tesla's recommending only to charge to 80%, and you wind up thinking, oh, look at that, there's a restaurant I didn't see, and you go sit down, are you going to get like bump, you know, move your car? You know what I mean? What do they call that?
Idle fees.
Or will it just automatically charge up to 90%? You don't have to go tell it to give you, or you get on your app and readjust it. You know what I'm saying? When you just let Tesla manage the charging and then you wind up spending 45 minutes longer, are you getting bumped out, or you just go open the app, or does it automatically charge it up to 90%?
You know, it'd be nice if it would just unplug it for me and I could summon it from the charger and not get charged an idle.
That's coming.
You know, if we had wireless charging, I suppose that could happen, right? You could just summon it to the out of the charging spot. But that's a good call out, because, you know, some vehicles do have free charging, maybe through Electrify America or through Tesla. But then some chargers have the idle fees, and I've never been charged an idle fee yet, but I have had to bolt out of the restaurant and, you know, run with my flip-flops and go with the car, because it does send you a notification on your phone that, you know, idle fees will happen, I think, in 10 minutes, something like that. And they can accumulate pretty quick. From what I understand, they even change in price depending on the station demand, I think it is.
Yeah, so I think if the price changes, but whether they charge you or not, I believe is it $1 a minute or 40 cents a minute? I can't remember now, but it's enough to get you running across the parking lot in flip flops. Absolutely.
And you can open up the app and you change.
You can. And I've done this where I set my max charge level to 80%. Right. And then it's like, oh, well, we decided we're going to, you know, okay, everybody goes to Starbucks, and with my family, that takes like an extra 10, 15 minutes by the time everybody decides what they're going to get. So then I go on my app and I say, okay, now I'm going to take the max charge up to 90%. And then it will still go to 90%. It'll consider that part of your normal charging habit. The place where you start getting charge idle fees is the car stops charging, right? So let's say it hits the 90% and you're still there. And then it's like 10 minutes. And like Ryan said, you do get a notification. And then if you don't respond to that, the idea, of course, of idle fees is charge and get out so that somebody else can charge, which totally makes sense. I'm a big fan of idle fees.
It's not an option to open up the app and say, okay, charge it to 100%.
You know? Yes, you can. You can. And then it's really slow. But of course, you're getting charged for it still. And I think what Ryan was bringing up there is some vehicles, like I think the Volkswagen ID4, that they came with, you know, so many years of free charging. And so what they're finding, I think Kyle from Out of Spec Reviews did a video on this. What they're doing is because it's free, the ID4 owners will. And there are some others. I don't want to pick on Volkswagens. They'll take it up to 100%, and then it's really, really slow, right, at the end. So the car can sit there for an hour, hour and a half, getting its final trickle charge, and it's blocking that charger, and people are just doing it because it's free right now. They don't really need that charge. So how do you combat that so that there's enough charging to go around?
What works for me is I typically love using like a search engine, right? Like a Google or something like that, right? But you know, what I find works for me actually is another app like PlugShare. There's way more information on it, right? Like Google has some information about, you know, where a charger might be, but if you're kind of looking for the play-by-play, you know, what's happening on any given day, really, like is the charger working? You know, is it broken or has anything happened recently? PlugShare, you can leave a review, you can upload a picture, you can, you know, even rate how fast it was. So there's just a wealth of information that I think is, you know, for me, I couldn't plan a trip without it, I guess, because it helps me avoid the, you know, chargers without maybe the amenities, because I too enjoy some Starbucks or some Dunkin' or something to that effect. And, you know, to have that station that's in a better location, for me, that's ideal. So I try and, you know, keep my trips kind of cruising as best we can, right? You know, with the family. And so we try and avoid the dinners now. I think we did a few of those to start, but Yeah, it's always good to have the information about where you can charge, what options you have nearby for food, bathrooms, stuff like that.
And after a while, you find your favorites, right? So for a while, the Lansing Supercharger was one of my favorites because they had an independent coffee shop called Chapelure in that little shopping center. And then at some point, they decided to move. And then the only place that you could go was, you know, some of the bigger places like, well, there was a Fairfield Marriott. And then during COVID, they wouldn't let you go in and use the restroom. So it was kind of annoying. So then you're going to Culver's. And now I hear in Lansing, I haven't used it yet, there's a new supercharger that's at a Meijer. And to me, I really like the Meijer, the Hy-Vee, because they just have everything and anything. Somebody needs something from, you know, the pharmacy, or they just need some other little doodad. So often we don't even want to eat out. One of our favorite things to do is go into a Meijer or Hy-Vee and pick up a baguette. And then get some lunch meat and good cheeses and things like that and just eat in the car.
And again, is that what Ryan was kind of pointing out? That if you try to sit down for dinner, the car charges too fast.
It's so fast that somebody's got to get up in the middle and move the car.
First world problem, right?
I know, right?
We've come a long way though, right? It's not the sit for 5 hours kind of thing, right? Which I think is a misconception.
Which with my car is that way, right? So I have the Bolt. I still go wherever, and it is PlugShare. You're right. I find that also. I try to use Google, but it just, PlugShare is so good. But my car takes 3 hours because it's, you know, the car itself limits the charging, right? So mine's first generation, right? They came out in 2011, and it's 16 amp.
Yeah, you got the 3.6, I think, kilowatt onboard charger.
Right.
So, it's slow. But you have a PHEV, right? So...
Right, I don't.
But you're kind of gamifying, right? You're saying, right, well, I want to run on electricity. I don't want to burn gas.
Listen to this, though. Carl was talking about charging etiquette. So my probably go-to is downtown Kalamazoo, and PlugShare has a great thing on there. And they're the hospital, it's the third level, and so you're covered parking. It's free, and they have six chargers all lined up. They used to be ChargePoint, and then a couple years, you know, when ChargePoint went off, like if you don't upgrade to their new fancy charger, then they cut you off, but you could still use the chargers. And then they went and just got Bosch chargers, I believe. The other night, I'm up there charging, and there's two Model 3s on this side of me and two of the new Kia sports car, really good looking
EV6,
car.
Yeah.
And my car's unplugged. I only got a half my charger. And well, they're six, so there was still one free. But I think these guys were like, why? Kind of what you heard in Carl just point out. You got an ICE engine in there. You don't need the charge.
Yeah, but that's uncool. That's not cool.
That is.
Yeah, especially when there are enough chargers.
Really frustrating. And I think what I keep trying to bring to the table to our Kiva meetings is we have to be careful about getting so tribal. Like, I'm a Tesla guy, and if you don't have Tesla, you suck. Right? Anybody that can plug in, it should just be all plug-in cars. We need to support each other and, you know, be fans. I don't know.
What is cool is the place offering the free charging. And I'll tell you, we got a couple bowling alleys around us, right? And for instance, one of them has free charging, right? And, you know, you can guess which one you find me at, right? I'm going to the bowling alley that offers me some free charging. So it's really cool.
Skyline, right? Is it Skyline?
Yeah, Airway Lanes. I think it's got it's a family fun center. In fact, there's probably no better place to stop on a road trip, right by the freeway, even right by the airport. So you can stop, you know, have some pizza. They got bowling. They got really crazy arcade games. Like these aren't your Pac-Man games. These are the, like, strap some VR goggles on and they give you swords and it's, your kids will love it. But free charging, right?
And that's a draw. The funny thing is, it doesn't really cost them that much. So to me, this is like a message to businesses. And I've said this before, and when I've given some talks to business people, says, even if you personally aren't into EVs, if you're not putting charging at your location, EV people are going to go to your competition that does, right? Yeah. Hotels for me is a huge one in that area.
And when they're operating all this amusement park, you know, rides and different games that are already using so much electricity, it's they don't even notice it, right? It's a rounding error in their total electricity spend. So I love it. And you know, I wouldn't unplug Carl, or rather Larry's EV if I seen him though. But I know what you're saying, right? Because if you are in a pinch, right, you do want to unplug Larry's car, but I wouldn't. But you get what I'm saying, right?
They were doing it more.
It was more tribal, like, right?
Well, yeah.
We're committed. We're all EV, and your car doesn't count because it has a backup generator. And it's like, nah. But I get a lot of that. My Kiva Club. Yeah. Ever since I've got it, I find that people kind of like, you know, oh, you're one of them, you know.
And I have to say, unfortunately, as a Tesla and a non-Tesla owners, there's some of that as well, right? I mean, I've been part of a couple of Tesla clubs in my past where I would ask, hey, can we open this event up to other EVs? And they're like, no, I wouldn't touch one of those with a 10-foot pole. This is for Teslas only. I'm like, okay, well, if you want to be that way. What's that?
I say, if you have a CCS car, you know, you may envy the supercharger network, you know, the gold standard in a sense, the plug and charge kind of, you know, zero hassle approach. Whereas the CCS car, you can have, you know, an app involved. And if you have poor cell phone service, it only kind of adds to the frustration. Or if it's a new network you've never experienced, like you have to download the Shell Recharge or Shell buys Volta. So now you have to stop using the Volta app and use the Shell app. So there's a learning curve, I think,
absolutely,
on some of the other EVs. And I think, you know, those customers are having some teething pains at times. And I think that they have some frustration. They like to vent, and then it doesn't help that the Tesla kind of club is rubbing it in their nose at times or not making it easy on them. Right. I mean, to your point, Larry, we got to kind of open it all up. Right. Cause Rivian opened a brand new fast charger. It's super reliable. It looks like it's a lovely install, but you know, even at, I think a Dunkin' Donuts or I think it's a Dunkin' Donuts over there in Benton Harbor, but only a Rivian can charge there. Right. And
And there was we had some discussion about that on the last show. I think that, you know,
is that the right way to go?
The reason we bought another Tesla, and you know, we have a Kia, not EV6, but the Kia Niro, and we've taken it on a road trip, and it's fine. But there were times when we came to the last charger available, whereas with the Tesla, like I said, the whole trip to Phoenix never had a single issue with a supercharger. You know, I was making videos along the way. It's like, well, this is getting boring because there's nothing, there's no drama because you're just plugging and charging. Where do you go from here? Are you looking at maybe adding some more solar now that you're consuming more? Does it also make you start thinking about more electrification? So, you know, you mentioned gas appliance. I have a gas water heater. Mm-hmm. And I've been reading recently with the Inflation Reduction Act that maybe there's some incentives for me to go that route. Plus, from what I'm reading, it's a little bit like an EV where there's a slightly higher upfront cost, but then the operating cost makes that payback quickly. You mentioned home battery. So where do you kind of envision the Ryan household moving forward?
Yeah. You know, the vehicle to grid stuff is pretty interesting. I think it's awesome that they can offer it, but you know, I understand that the more use you put on your battery, you know, the worse it can maybe be in the long term. I think, you know, we call it maybe a cycle or something to that effect. You know, and battery degradation is a real issue you have to confront, I think, at some point with an EV. There's different battery chemistries, I understand, that can impact, you know, how bad this will happen to your EV or how much battery degradation you'll have on your EV. So I think we're going to see probably, you know, the Prignitz household look forward to maybe a, you know, it'd be awesome if Tesla had the Model X with like an LFP battery, I think they call it. And that LFP, I think it is a battery storage technology or chemistry that I think we see commonly used now in like home battery storage. You know, I've been looking at the different solar and home energy production kind of websites where they talk about these topics. And it seems like a lot of companies like Panasonic and others are offering these LFP batteries, which are meant to be discharged and I guess recharged in their entirety, you know, like 0 to 100%, and, you know, have it go through like 1,000, 2,000 cycles, something crazy high, and you know, they'll have no issues with it. So vehicle to grid, I don't like the idea there that I have to keep my car at at the house, and then I've got to put all this use on the battery, which can, you know, maybe have a consequence at some point down the road. So looking at how the IRA could maybe offer me the ability to, you know, expand my solar array and get one of those LFP battery storage systems, I think that'd be really awesome. And then, yeah, it'd be awesome if Tesla were to offer that Model X with one of these new battery chemistries that I hear could be, you know, quite beneficial over the long term. Mm-hmm. Have you heard anything about that as well? Some of the different battery chemistries and how different.
Yeah, the LFP. I know. I think we have some folks in our West Michigan EV group that have one of those. And one of the first thing you notice is that the Tesla used to have on their battery bar, where you set the max charge, they would have like a daily, and then they would have trip. And so the idea was, it's not good for the battery to be charged to 100% every day. Mm-hmm. And so you want to back off from that. And I think the LFP, which is the F is FE, right? It's lithium iron phosphate. It doesn't have that property where it doesn't like to be charged to 100%. So yeah, that's a great point. One thing you mentioned though, as far as battery and, you know, using the battery in your vehicle versus having a home battery, maybe an important point: when the power is out, your solar panels don't help you if you don't have a battery. And that is because when you're grid tied, the inverters are set up in such a way so that when it doesn't get that voltage from the line, from the outside line, it will not allow electricity to be generated, to be changed from DC, which is what the panels generate, over to AC. The idea being, if you send AC on the line while there's a power outage and there's some, you know, poor lineman, linewoman up there trying to make a fix, and they're going to get electrocuted. So most panels that are grid tied, I think all of them, they have to shut off. When you have a battery backup or you have a generator and it sees, the system sees that excitation voltage, now you can use it during a power outage. So that is another incentive to maybe go with a battery, not just to have that, you know, a backup where you can generate and then use your own electricity, but also that you are truly off grid then when the time comes and you can, you know, I think there's a big changeover switch so that you're not sending voltage out onto the line. So yeah. To me, that would be an important consideration.
This brings up good topics too. So I've been looking into the V2G. When there's 100 cars that the power company's pulling at, it's only moving, it's only taking like 5% of your charge. It's not taking a whole, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And that they say that all the battery chemistry would not be affected by that. It's so you wouldn't be able to see it.
Well, I think we just don't have any experience with that. I think that's kind of what Ryan was pointing at. Like if I'm giving the power company or whomever access to my battery, then I want to be sure that I'm not going to get early degradation to the point where that little bit of money that I'm getting is actually worth it. So I think those things kind of have to shake out over time. You know, what we're finding already is that batteries are lasting longer than people ever thought. But if I'm going to put this into this vehicle to grid service and it's going to cycle a little bit, I want to be sure, I want to have some kind of a guarantee. And I think the OEMs or whoever's producing the battery, if they can put some kind of a guarantee that says, yes, you can put this into V2L, V2G service, and it's not going to impact your battery warranty, then, you know, that would make me personally feel a little bit better about it.
Yeah, for sure. And maybe even the power company could offer, if, you know, if there is something that happens to your battery, we have an insurance policy or something that help. Maybe a small battery at home just to get you a couple hours. But wouldn't you guys both agree that you only need the power when you don't need the air conditioning running full blast if you're not home? You don't need the hot water heater to be running if you're not home.
Larry, I must say, as a Tesla owner, I think I'm contractually required to say that, you know, I'm expected to have my vehicle on Uber in fully autonomous mode in no time. And it will be making me money, you know, operating in full autonomous mode 24 hours a day. So I expect this vehicle, Elon Musk, to, you know, make my car capable of doing that. So whether that's really going to happen, I don't think it probably will in the very near future. But
yeah.
I think that's why Tesla is maybe not focused on vehicle to grid as much. I think they're all about the AI and focusing on, you know, all their engineering efforts on that. And some of the other brands, I think, are seeing the utility of maybe doing vehicle to grid. But I'm still wary about the, to your point, Larry, it'd be nice if there's a warranty or I guess a guarantee of sorts. But I don't think we've really seen anything like that in North America yet. One thing I've seen overseas that is quite interesting is I think I've seen battery swapping. I forget the manufacturer, but they essentially, you know, have you pull up to what looks like an oil change like station, and it can even be now fully, you know, automated. There's like an electronic robot of sorts that comes, you know, sits right beneath the battery. The battery pack gets released, and then in its place, a new fully charged battery, or at least a serviced fully charged battery, is, you know, installed in the vehicle.
And BYD, I think that's BYD.
That's the Chinese. Are they doing that? There was an Israeli company called, I think, The Right Place that was doing it. And I don't know if you've ever researched this, Ryan, but Tesla did a video early on where they did like a 90-second battery swap. And the reality is that most people didn't really want that. It was either that and you pay like the equivalent of a price of premium gas versus free supercharging at the time. And people are like, I'm not sure I want this.
Well, what I read about the service was that the battery, though, is, well, I guess it's detached from the car ownership, right? So
that's a great point. Yeah.
My battery, I guess at that point, it's vendor, you know, call it certified or you know, serviced kind of battery, right? I'm getting one of a certain quality and I'm going to get one of a certain quality when I, you know, get another one.
Yeah.
I think there was a subscription component to it. So it was almost like you're leasing your battery. Mm-hmm. And, but it could be interesting though. I mean, maybe you could lease a larger battery. I mean, wouldn't that be awesome to be able to upgrade your battery kind of post initial purchase? But,
yeah, when you're taking a road trip or something. Yeah.
And that brings up a whole nother rabbit hole. There's a semi company that is talking about that. The other benefit of swapping batteries is they would charge overnight. You could get you could control the off-grid charging, right? Yeah. Instead of being
You can charge it slower because you're not trying to get the battery. You're not trying to get back on the road in 20 minutes.
Right.
Yeah. And I even seen not to get too much further off topic, but a camper, you know, that had its own battery pack in the floor of it. Basically, it could have, I guess, 300 miles of range, and I think it even had its own electric motor to have it not impact your EV's range, which I was like, oh my gosh, like it's to say there's going to be so much change, I think, in
right.
battery technology, battery chemistry, and battery charging solutions that, you know, consumers just need to know what they're getting and have their expectations properly set and know that things are going to probably change quite rapidly. You know, it's like the smartphones when they first came out. You know, they were pretty cool, but they got way cooler very quick, you know?
Yeah. Which actually could be an argument for leasing cars, you know? We decided to buy, and, you know, back when I got my Model S, I thought, well, this is probably one of my last cars I'm ever going to buy because, you know, but then, like you said, the technology moves on, the charging gets faster, you get more capability, you get all the cameras and, you know, do you need all that 100%? No, probably not. But it is worthwhile having, and you know, it's part of the reason we upgraded. So something to think about.
I think Carl mentioned Tesla did research the battery swapping. The S was designed to be able to do that.
Yes.
But they ran the numbers, and I think Elon addressed it, that whole infrastructure, right, to have these swapping stations, by the time you pay for all that, it just doesn't make sense. So I'm going to kind of go with that gut. The swapping idea sounds
It's a
cool.
niche. I think it's a niche. So if you look at, I think it's in Taiwan, there's a scooter company called Gogoro. And look it up. That's kind of cool. So for that form factor, for that use case, it works really well. They have these battery swapping stations, and this looked like this big wall with all these handles sticking there. And each battery pack is about the size of a loaf of bread and also not particularly heavy. So what they do is you actually have a monthly subscription service. So it's not by the mile or the kilowatt hour or anything like that. You just have a monthly fee and you put your old batteries into that charging station and it reads whatever the serial number, which are now had been assigned to your account when you pulled them out, checks everything. And then two freshly charged batteries pop out. They're now assigned to your account. You put them back in your scooter and off you go. And for that, I think it works really well. And then again, you don't own the batteries. If the infrastructure is there for that, that's great. But now look at it from, you know, you got a Tesla and now you're driving to Montana or to Saskatchewan, and there's none of these stations there to swap a battery. Now you're charging again. And then you get into that discussion point, who owns the battery and that sort of thing. So it's a little bit complicated depending on the use case, but it is definitely compelling.
It could be amazing. I think it will be, at the end of the day, sometimes it's bragging rights and the demonstrated ability to be able to do something. And I think if Ford or GM were to try and have a big wow kind of event and say, we could offer this new model vehicle with, maybe it's got a pretty large battery pack, and we see the Hummer, right? It does in fact have a quite large battery pack, but, maybe it's our Ford dealerships. We'd have the ability to swap the battery, within, 10, 15 minutes. The demonstrated ability to be able to walk away with that full charge, to be able to get a quote unquote full charge in your commute, even if you had the ability to only do it in select locations. I mean, that would be quite impressive. And I think
idea. That's a good one. I haven't thought of that.
It could happen in our lifetime in North America, but it's interesting that everybody's in one way or another looking at it, right? They're considering it, and we'll definitely see a lot of changes, I think, in the near future with the chemistry in the batteries, of course, and then how we're going to charge those batteries. I think there's a lot of smart people looking at this.
Yeah. I mean, the one thing I come back to though is that, again, who owns the battery? It's kind of like buying a brand new grill tank, and then you go to the Blue Rhino thing and you get some rusted piece of junk, right? And then you're like, okay, is this safe? But again, if you can work out the financials and contractually who owns what, that might be tougher than the technology.
I think it's easier than you think about. And I only say this, the financials. If you look at tech companies, technology companies, and their valuation, their market value, a lot of them are thriving for SaaS or as a service kind of, sales model. The majority of their sales aren't like these one-time, purchases. It's a recurring revenue.
Yep.
The ability for a brand to, like an automotive company, to transition to being a SaaS or an as a service like company where they're having customers hooked to this recurring subscription, I think it could be very compelling, especially as they could see significant revenue being generated from these battery subscriptions and the flexibility.
Or that even vehicle subscriptions. I think Hyundai is doing it now. You can get everything, the vehicle, insurance, everything in one low monthly payment. It's not low, but one monthly payment. And then if you're done with it, you walk away. So yeah, there's some neat stuff coming.
I really like your take on that, Ryan. I haven't thought about it that way, but you're also in the tech industry, right? You're a programmer, is that correct?
Yeah, I look at code, review code, and I work in professional services with VMware. So we're one of the largest technology infrastructure software companies in the world. So it was huge to be able to see Tesla and their application of software and how they approach problems. And I think, now that the whole industry is looking at these problems, I think some really creative people are going to come up with some just, wildly impressive solutions. And, we're seeing it every year, I think, with the new vehicles that are coming out and how they're approaching, these topics. So, as a consumer, it's a really exciting time to be out there looking at EVs and looking at how you can generate power locally to be able to, charge those EVs and ultimately maybe even make a return on your solar investment. So, I think consumers are, just in a great place.
Man, that is, I really like that.
Gentlemen, I think we need to wrap this up. Ryan, any final thoughts on your solar and EV journey?
No, thanks for having me on, guys. I think I've shared plenty of my thoughts on the podcast. It was a blast being on here, and I look forward to being back again in the future.
Sounds good. Well, thanks for being on, and for our listeners, we'll catch you next time.
If you enjoyed or learned from this episode of Zero E Michigan, please subscribe to us on your favorite podcast platform. Visit our YouTube channel for other related videos at youtube.com/@0E-Michigan.